So I'm going to just ask you to start off with, if you just like to tell us a little bit about your background life, your family. Were they were they military? Were they in CND? A little bit about how you grew up, and then we'll have another question.
Okay, so I grew up in Lancashire in a quite ordinary but very nice working class family. I was the first person in my family to go to university. My parents were not really political, but they were, I suppose, what you'd say nowadays, liberal. And they were really pleased when I went to university. That's quite a big deal. Came from quite a creative background. My mum was always making things. Quite an arty background, really, although my mum would probably say, she would probably deny that. So I grew up in the 1970s, really, 60s and 70s. I was born in 62. So I was at university in 1980 in Reading, and that's where the Greenham connection came, purely because I lived in Reading. I don't know whether I would have been involved if I'd lived somewhere else. I've no way of knowing that. But because I was there, I was quite close and quite aware of what was going on. So by the time I graduated in 1983, I'd probably visited a few times, but kind of just for particular events, and I'm very hazy about timings and dates, but things like Embrace the Base, things where people, there'd maybe be a coach go from university or whatever. After I left university, I was still living in Reading, and I was working on and off in Reading. And that's when I got involved in the Greenham support group. Do you want me to carry on, or is that a good time for a pause and a question?
Well, my next question was going to be, how did you hear about Greenham, and how did you get involved, and were you in a peace group or a students group or?
So I suppose I knew about it in the way that all my friends knew about stuff that was going on. I mean, I suppose at the time there was a lot of things that we were aware of, like CND, Greenpeace. The whole Rock Against Racism thing. I can't remember the timings of that, but there were a lot of things going on that we used to go up to London for things to do with, let me see, what was it called? Ken Livingstone and the GLC, lots of basically big concerts that were to political concerts, if you like, to do with the GLC, Greater London Council, and so that was very much on my radar, and I was involved with women's groups. I was involved in CND, not particularly, I wasn't one of the organisers of it, but that was my world, if you like. That was something I was aware of and committed to, and I would have been quite... just really, really into those things that were happening. And I wasn't very tolerant of people who weren't aware of those things, I suppose. So that was my kind of, in a way, it was a social life, really. That was kind of the things that we did were to do with those sort of things, if you like. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. There was, there was a sort of anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, and and it was all, kicking off, really, wasn't it, in the '80s?
Yeah, there were Thatcher. Yes, absolutely, very much anti-Thatcher, and a lot of them. I mean, I was very, I suppose, my big thing. I was really into, I was studying art history, so I was really into art, but I was really into the music scene. So in Reading. This is a kind of funny thing, really. When my friend and I ended up at Reading University, we were the only two people who'd gone to a comprehensive school in our what do you call it, the res, you know, the halls of residence, and also we were quite sort of, you know, well, people used to think we were punks. I don't think we thought we were, because we weren't that hardcore, but you know, we looked a bit different and whatever. And it was the days of those sort of you know, kind of Hooray Henry and all that kind of look, you know, the sort of Lady Di kind of, and we were very different from that, and probably, you know, again a bit bit sort of intolerant of, you know, the mainstream, I suppose. Mainstream was kind of the just what we despised, really. I think we, you know, we probably weren't kind of, I think we thought we were nicer than we actually were, really. Thinking about it, I think we, you know, we were a bit sort of intolerant of people who were different to, which is, you know, which isn't very nice, really. But I've lost my thread now of what, oh, so this hall of residence. So the first time we got there, I think literally the first weekend that we were at university, we looked at this information little booklet that they gave you at Reading University, and it said about all the different pubs and venues and things, and it said about this one, I think it was called the Star, and it said don't go there, it's full of punks and townies. So that's where we went straight there, and I worked out I had £10 a week to spend on sort of food and going, you know, not the kind of, you know, that I didn't have bills because I was in a hall of residence, but my first time away from home, and I had £10 a week to spend, and I spent my first week's £10 on a leather jacket from a vintage shop. So that was the sort of thing I was doing at the time, I suppose. That maybe gives an image.
Oh, thank you. That's great, Wendy. So, as you say, Reading was very, very local, really, to Newbury and Greenham.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happened a lot was the newspaper coverage, and the I mean, you know, I lived at camp a lot, and the relentless rocking up of reporters, and we dread it, because we know that they just, that everything in the newspapers was so disparaging about us, and you must have come across quite a lot of newspaper reports being in a local newspapers and everything. Do you remember any of that?
No, because to be honest, I probably wouldn't have had any time for any local newspapers at all, except for, and this is probably significant, there was a really crucial local magazine that came out at the time. Now, I don't know when it started. There's a big archive of it now, actually, and that was a magazine called Red Rag. So,
oh, yeah.
So that was a local. I don't know what they would have called it, an alternative paper. What I remember about it is that lots of people I knew were involved in. This is probably maybe a bit more like post 83 for me. So. There was an alternative bookshop. Is that what they used to call these things? Yeah, I think they used to call it an alternative bookshop. Can't remember what that was called. Acorn Books. And you could get Red Rag there. And lots of people I knew contributed to it. I think I was in it a few times, photographs of stuff that we'd done. Because there were lots of things going on. I used to go to the unemployment centre, because I was sort of part unemployed and part employed. I had some work on and off with the local authority running play schemes and that sort of thing. But people used to go to this unemployment centre anyway, really, because there were lots of things going on. I learned to silkscreen print there, and there were lots of performances, and I was involved a little bit in that. Lots of workshops, lots of adult education. So anyway, this magazine, Red Rag, I suppose anything to do with Greenham was incredibly positive. It couldn't have been anything other than positive. So I don't remember anything about reading bad stuff. Do you know what I mean? I had the other side of, I wouldn't have had any time for it. I don't think I, you know, would have got a news, I wouldn't have bought a newspaper. I probably didn't watch much news. I mean, I knew what was going on, so, but I wouldn't have seen, I suppose, the stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, I think living at camp, we just we obsessively had to sort of monitor the public, yeah. You know, the newspapers. I think I know them as the independent bookshops, which there are not many now. Because some of the women at Greenham used to go to the Reading Unemployment Centre sometimes for things like the screen printing.
Yeah.
So did you get involved with a sort of a little group of women? Because, you know, tell us a bit more about how you got more involved.
So after I finished university, I stayed in Reading. A lot of people, I'd say the majority of people who I knew as friends at Reading, when they graduated, they went to London. There was a sort of mass movement, really. I mean, people went to do obviously very different things, but that was the way people went. It was 20 minutes away on the train. So, but I didn't want to do that. And I stayed in Reading, and I'd got involved in play schemes and painting murals and building inflatables was one thing we were doing, as in, you know, the inflatables that kids jump on. You know, there's lots of quite creative things going on. And so I was in Reading. First of all, I had a flat share with a couple of art students who were still there because it was a four-year, theirs was a four-year course. And then I moved in with a friend of mine. Her testimony is on the whole Greenham Women Everywhere thing. I've just been listening to a bit of it, actually. So she was a single parent at that stage. Well, in fact, she split up from her husband. And she's living with her little boy, and she needed somebody to help pay the rent. So I moved in with her. And so that was a really significant thing, really, because I suppose my involvement with things kind of ramped up a gear because she was more involved. So she was involved in something called Reading Women's Centre, which was a really, again, it was part of my, you know, it sounds trivial to say social life, but, you know, that was where I kind of gravitated towards. So there were lots of things going on, Reclaim the Night marches, that sort of thing. And at the Reading Women, at the Reading Women's Centre, there was a Greenham support group. So that then became a more regular thing for me, because until then I'd just bobbed over for, you know, maybe the odd day when there was something happening where they invited lots of people, if you see what I mean, or lots of people were welcomed. So then it became this, and I don't know how long I did this for, but it was, I suppose it was a significant time. On a Thursday, there was a rota of women who would do what was called the night watch at Blue Gate. So that was a shift where you sat and you made sure that the fire kept going, and that if there was any sight of bailiffs, then you would be aware of that, and you'd wake people up, and you'd, you know, move stuff away before they carted it off. So there was that. So there was the night watch which I think was on a Thursday night. And then there was something called the Greenham Food Run. And I think that was a bit later that we did that. And that was the thing where men were involved with that. So they helped cook stuff. So I think it was on a Sunday. I don't think it was every Sunday. So basically we would cook. We'd cook these really nice meals, and then somebody would pick them up from your house, whatever you'd made, and you might have made like a big, I don't know, four trays of flapjacks or whatever, and somebody would pick them up and then they'd take them off. I didn't have a car at the time, so I wasn't, whenever I went there, I was taken in somebody's nice car or somebody's not so nice car, I can't remember, but so yeah, I was usually sitting in the back of a car being taken. So probably, you know, would have hazy memories of exactly where it was, you know, probably wouldn't be able to drive there now, because I never drive there. I was always a passenger. So yeah, night watch and the food run were the two things.
So have you got any nice anecdotes to tell us about doing night watch? I mean, you were there. Was it just you and another woman, or did you get night visitors?
There were usually, no, it wasn't just me and my friend. They'd usually get maybe, well, it was certainly a carload of you, so maybe five. I've just read Lynn's account now, so that she reminded me that it wasn't the whole night. It was either 8 till 2 or 2 till 8, so it covered the whole night. So I think there were people who, I mean, I think sometimes I would have got up in the morning if I had a shift. I used to get odd shifts of work. Rather, I didn't have a full-time job at the time, but if I got offered a shift, I would work it. So you could just about do that, really. You could stay up till two and then have a bit of sleep when you got back and then get up. I don't remember a lot of detail. I remember sitting around the fire. I remember keeping the fire going. Lynn remembers more than I do. She said, you know, we often used to let the fire go out until we realised that that was really important. So we'd then have to remake it before anybody woke up. I don't remember anything really dramatic happening when we were there. I think we closely missed some big evictions and things, but I was never there for that. Lots of singing, you know, lots of singing. I mean, we're probably not in the middle of the night singing, you know, but sort of say if you got there at eight, you'd be there when people, you know, obviously people wouldn't have gone to bed and whatever. I suppose. Yeah, no, I can't. I really can't remember any particular anecdotes right now.
Oh, okay. Well, you've actually remembered a little bit more. One of the things that that happened that made a lot of had quite an impact really in terms of support was that when the cruise missiles left, really that we had a sort of press D notice, and even CND said that in their Sanity magazine that, you know, the missiles have gone and the women have left the camp, and we hadn't. Yellow Gate was still being lived out, Blue Gate was, and various other gates would be temporary sometimes. But were you still around the area, because it was it's much later on?
I'd left. I went to live in Cardiff. I had a full-time job and I wasn't involved at that stage. So no, I don't remember that. I did go when they, this is much later, and we were living here in the Forest of Dean. I took my children when they had that kind of ceremony where they sort of gave it back to the, as common land.
Ah, yes.
And actually that was amazing, because people were invited to bring bolt cutters. And that was always the thing about, you know, back then, you know, there would be people who had bolt cutters, and if you had them in the car, you know, they'd have to be hidden in case somebody found them. And then, it was always this thing about people getting hold of bolt cutters and then making sure nobody saw that you had bolt cutters. But anyway, in this particular thing, people were encouraged to take bolt cutters and cut down a bit of the fence. So I've got a bit in the garden somewhere. I think probably it's had runner beans growing up it at some point. But Lena's kept hers, and hers is the photograph on the testimony where she's holding it in front of her. So she's been a bit more careful with hers as a piece of history, but I wasn't. But anyway, we went, we took our, so my children went, they were quite little at the time. And we cut a bit of fence and people just wandered around, and some, you know, speeches by the mayor, I think. Were you there for that? Do you remember that?
No, I wasn't there for that. But that's really nice to have someone talk about that.
Yeah. The other thing, just going back to sort of what I remember, I suppose I remember, you know, just that that sense of being out there at night in the quiet with the fire. And that's when I often kind of remember it, is if I'm somewhere with a fire and I can't help myself but saying, oh, it's like being at Greenham, especially that thing where the, you know, wherever you are with a fire, somehow the smoke finds you, isn't it? And then you have to move, you have to go and find another sort of log to sit on or whatever over the other side. And then suddenly the smoke will start going in your direction, and just that stinging in your eyes, and that taste of the smoke, and sometimes that's a bit unpleasant, and sometimes it's quite nice, really, that sort of smoky, you know, being around a fire. And that always reminds me of that, really, if I'm around a fire now for some reason.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite nostalgic, isn't it, the smell of wood smoke?
Yeah. I think the other thing that sometimes I remember when I see something is just when people attach things to fences or wires, because the fence was very, apart from people hacking into it, it, the other thing about it, it was very decorative. So people would bring stuff, you know, bring wool and weave it, you know, ribbons and pictures of people. And I think that just that idea of decorating the space around you was a big thing. And I probably hadn't come across that at that point at all. So that's a nice, a visual memory, really.
Yes. Yeah. And again, that's carried on, hasn't it, really, with various other protests that are happening now. So you mentioned your children. Do you think that how did they must have grown up knowing about Greenham because your involvement and taking them there? But one of the reasons for the Greenham Women Everywhere project is that an awful lot of quite a few younger generations are completely unaware of the Greenham Women. People think of Newbury protests as being the road protest for the bypass, which was only there for less than a year. And I wondered if you found that yourself, and how the fact that your children knew about it, if it's had any impact on them and their lives.
Well, I suppose you'd have to ask them, really. I'm not sure. I don't know about, it's sort of taking Greenham as one thing, isn't it, rather than the whole thing, as in, myself and Howard as parents, and you can't really take one element of what you've done and work out what influence it's had on, kind of cause and effect sort of thing. But I suppose they've grown up with a certain sort of certain sort of politics, I suppose, a certain sort of ideology, and I would think that has had some sort of influence on them. Who knows? They might have found they've definitely found their own way. I think they probably would be I think they're happy to have that background. I mean, they do their own thing. They're not, neither of them is overtly political, shall we say, but they I think it would be arrogant of me to suggest that I particularly have had influence through what I've done, but I've always I suppose we've always believed in being quite honest about what our opinions are, they've both grown up with I would say a feminist ideology, and I'm really proud of how they are in terms of that, really, I suppose.
Thank you. I was looking at it from a fairly broad thing of like the what gets through, crosses through down the generations, and what gets erased, what doesn't get promoted. So that's why I've got involved with this project, because I've been, increasingly realizing how so few younger people who are actively political, at Yorkley Court, which is our local Forrester Dean thing for 3.5 years. They'd had no idea about how we'd reclaim the common. They'd never heard of it. Another question is about going back to sort of the local scene, really, around Reading and Newbury, was Cruise Watch. Did you come across Cruise Watch at all?
Well, I came across it. So that was, remind me what that was exactly.
One of the things that we would maybe be interested in having Night Watch for is the activity that was going on inside the base at night, where they might be lining up to
when it was due to go out.
When it was due to go out. Yeah. And then we would alert people on the route. There were two or three routes, and we never knew which route they were going on. So Cruise Watch was sort of partly monitoring which route it was taking and then alerting people to observe it. And it was often at night, because they'd shut the roads down. I mean, the M4 used to be, sections of it would be shut down. Did you see any of that or know about that? Because the Reading people were involved with that.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that that's maybe something that you would be more involved in if you were a driver, and if you could, did people drive to spots where you would be looking out for it? I was definitely aware of it. Sure. And I know that at some points when it was, you know, they were, because of course it's funny, isn't it? You know, you're talking, it doesn't feel that long ago, but I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if there'd been mobile phones then? You know,
yeah.
You didn't necessarily even have a telephone in your flat if it was a rented flat or whatever. So I think we had a phone when I moved in with Lynn, we had a phone there. So people could, you know, and you had these things called telephone trees where like somebody would phone somebody and then somebody would phone somebody else, because phone calls were quite expensive, weren't they? So there were things like that. So yes, I was definitely aware of it, and there would be conversations about, oh yeah, Cruise went out last night, and or people had, or it was coming back and people would block the gate and that sort of thing. So I'm sure I was there when that happened, but I can't remember much about it. And I certainly wasn't that involved in the whole keeping an eye on where it was.
No, it was a Cruise Watch was sort of, you know, it's an autonomous group. No. And it involved quite a lot of men, and local men would, they'd be often the ones that would have cars rather than women. And they would sit in their cars. We used walkie-talkies. You're so right about the mobile phones and, you know, the nearest phone box, and did you have the right coins and everything. And, but they used walkie-talkies, and then there would the Cruise Watch men would sit, you know, a couple of miles away. They didn't used to come to camp, really.
No, now you're saying it. I was aware of it, but, yeah, not involved with it. Something I do remember, this is an anecdote. I might have told you about this before, just sort of one-to-one. But so you remember the place called The Little Chef, the kind of roadside cafe thing?
Yes. You remember
The Little Chef? So there was a Little Chef. Now, again, because I didn't drive, I couldn't tell you exactly where it was, and I've got hazy memory for the best of times, but it was somewhere on the Greenham side of Newbury, possibly. Do you remember where it was?
I do vaguely, but I didn't have a car. So.
Well, anyway, there was a thing about Greenham women being refused entry to go and get a cup of tea or whatever. And I never went into Little Chef after that. So I boycotted it, and everybody I knew did as well. Nobody went to Little Chef, and I think they've just recently gone bust. I think they just they ambled on being a pretty sort of you know, kind of, I don't think they were a high sort of high functioning business, but you would see one now and again. And every time we passed one in the car, like going up the motorway or whatever, or A roads, I suppose, then I would always say, oh, Little Chef, you know, didn't serve green and women. So that's the kind of thing my children heard about.
Yeah, it remind that there were so many sort of branches of solidarity that came out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of them in the later years was Women's Aid to Former Yugoslavia, and a lot of the Greenham sort of network support groups around the country got involved with raising aid to take to former Yugoslavia during the war.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And Joe Brand did an awful lot of work supporting that and making it public. Do you remember that? Were you
not really? No, I think, I mean, what year would we be then?
95.
Yeah, so there, I mean, funnily enough, I had a friend who'd come from the former Yugoslavia. We were in antenatal together, so I had small children living in Cardiff, Yeah, so a different sort of thing. I mean, when I was in Cardiff, there were things, you know, I was involved in things, nothing to do with Greenham, but, you know, at one point there was a women's disco that I used to run it when the person who usually did it wasn't around and stuff like that. So I was much less involved.
Yeah,
but still aware of stuff going on.
I mean, that's the spin-off. You take that experience with you into the rest of your life, and it has to be sort of site specific in a way. Wherever you happen to be how you find expression, but there is a continuum, I think, in that. Greenham experiences stay with you, and, you know, evolves, doesn't it, as you evolve.
It's funny, you know, I'm in a community choir, which obviously isn't functioning right now in the same way, but every now and again we do a song will crop up, usually something like a round, you know, and and it's usually me, but I don't know whether anybody else in choir was anything to do with Greenham. I think they were aware, you know, some people were aware of it, but not really involved. And I wasn't involved, obviously, full time, but, you know, involved enough to sort of certainly know all the songs and whatever. And I'll just have to say, we used to sing this at Greenham, and people are really quite fascinated by that, you know. So it's sort of like it's living, it feels like, okay, it's like living history through songs cropping up.
Absolutely. Okay. One of the things that slightly gets me with the choir singing is that it is like choir singing. It's choral, and when we'd sing those songs, like doing blockades or round the campfire, it was always a lot more raucous and actually a much more heartfelt sort of energy in it, you know. I actually find it quite hard to sing those Greenham songs like in a choir.
Well, the choir I go to is a natural voice choir, so it has a very different feel, I think, to it, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice. Okay. Well, look, shall we round up now?
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you ever so much, Wendy.
Okay, no problem.
That's fascinating to know a bit more about you.
So which gate were you at then? I kind of have to...
Well, I was mainly at Blue Gate, but I also used to go to Green Gate because Blue Gate was so on the front line with the traffic, and so Green Gate.
I wonder whether we ever met then.
Well, we may well have done, but yeah, it was mainly Blue Gate,
I've got such a bad memory, I think, of detail, and I don't, you know, I've got a few photographs, but not many. Oh, I haven't. I didn't tell you about going. I gave evidence in court as well.
Oh, yeah, you must tell us about that.
Oh, I can't remember much about it.
They all say that.
Well, yeah, it's probably a good idea. Yeah, because I wasn't ever brave enough to get arrested. I just, you know, I just kept out of the way. But I did give evidence. A friend of mine, an American woman called Sue, that's all I remember about her, who'd I think quite clearly been doing some damage, but I think I'm not sure what I said. I probably shouldn't say very much. Don't know whether you can retrospectively get done for this.
No.
Quite a lot of court appearances and things. That's the nearest I got to it. My friend got arrested. Well, actually, lots of my friends got arrested.
Well, was it in Newbury or Reading Court? Because they started hearing court cases all across the country at one point.
I think it was Newbury. I borrowed some shoes because I didn't have any shoes that weren't sort of, you know, that didn't look like I was, you know, heavily involved in Greenham. So I borrowed these black court shoes off somebody. To just sort of look a bit more respectable.
Yes.
I can't remember anything else but what I wore. Only I remember the black court shoes.
Oh.
Anyway, we were wrapping up, so let's wrap up.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Okay, well, thanks a lot, and see you soon,
yeah,
hopefully.
See you soon. Okay.
Bye-bye.